Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Whole Foods Market brings you meals worth sharing this holiday season. Visit WholeFoodsMarket.com/shop for our online menu and ordering system. Local turkeys, inspired sides, and even a little something for your hosts, all available online or in-store at one of our 6 Manhattan locations. Visit WholeFoodsMarket.com for more details.
Welcome to Hot Grease. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. This Heritage Radio Network program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Every week on Hot Grease, we bring people back to what's great in food. Culinary traditions, cooking at home, knowing your farmer, or even growing your own food. I spotlight good food fighters and the culture of the food movement. From chefs to tastemakers to moms on a budget. Today, we'll be talking the countdown to Turkey Day and the Southern Soul Food Revival. If you're listening live to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network, we have a call-in number, folks. Our number here at the studio, 718-497-2128. We're nearing the home stretch. That means the home stretch to Turkey Day, a.k.a. Thanksgiving. In the studio to chat all things Thanksgiving is Shannon Mustafer. Shannon is a cook, an explorer of foods of the past, and a contributor to foodcultures.com. Shannon, welcome to Hot Grease.
Nicole, it's really good to be here with you today.
You've been to the studio before, but now, you know, we have a full 30 minutes of all things Shannon and food.
I'm really excited to share with you some things that I've been working on and to talk about the upcoming holiday.
Cool. So let's go straight in first. I have to ask you this question. This whole, what is stuffing, what is dressing?
What is stuffing, what is dressing?
Well, let me ask you first, what do you prefer?
Me, I prefer dressing. I don't really do turkeys myself. And that's because I tend to host smaller gatherings. I know it's a shocker. It's a little bit off to the side, but I don't like the big birds, and I like to mix it up and do menus that are a little off the beaten track and a little more exciting for my guests.
So you do the dressing.
I do the dressing on the side, yeah. I feel like it gives me a little more like control over the flavors. I don't have to worry about whether the bird is cooked or not. And I can make as much as I want or as little as I want.
So I'm trying to dissect the difference. I think the difference is it the cornbread?
Cornbread over like regular bread.
Yeah, because I think the stuffing is just like usually sourdough or whatever bread you have on hand, right?
Yeah, dressing is definitely something you need to have cornbread for. In my family, we kind of use those words interchangeably.
We do.
We kind of use whatever is more convenient for us at the time, whether it's like some stale bread that we have left over or some cornbread that we make from scratch.
Yeah, that's funny because I grew up, me and you are both children of the South.
It's a good place to come from.
Yes.
Yeah.
I always saw cornbread. I don't remember anyone putting like stale bread in the dressing.
Yeah, my grandma would do it. I mean, she was that type of person that would do her best to make use of everything that was around. So if that, you know,
it makes sense to stretch the dressing. So what recipe do you use? Or what do you use when you're making your dressing?
I keep it really basic. I do chicken stock. I'll fry up some gizzards, livers, innards, whatever I get from the birds I'm working with. Or maybe I'll buy some extra from the butchers. Do some celery, carrots, add a little flavor. Sometimes some fennel if I want to like fancy it up a little bit.
You love that fennel, girl.
Fennel does the job.
That's funny. So I have experimented for the last probably like 5 or 6 years with this pecan a dressing with actually pecans. In the last few years, I use Edna Lewis's recipe of pecan sage dressing. I think it's out of one of the last cookbooks she did with Scott Peacock. So I love the crunch of the pecans in the dressing. It doesn't have innards. It's chicken stock. It's bacon.
Bacon sounds like a really good idea.
Yeah, the bacon fat. So we have to move to, how am I going to ask you this question? Because you don't do turkey. What do you do? Do you do Cornish hens or a small?
I'll do game hens. Like, I've done Cornish hens in the past. Last year, I did quail. Everybody got a quail in, like, three different seasonings on the side. Yeah, again, it just depends on how many people I have over and what else I'm going to serve.
So my next one is brine versus a herb butter rub. So if you were going to do a turkey, particular a heritage breed turkey, shout out to Patrick's at Heritage Foods USA, what would you use, herb brine or?
I would say brine first and then maybe use that rub. I think that when you're working with something like some meat that you have to cook for a long time, if you're using a method that works on that bird from the inside out like a brine does,
yeah,
to really kind of like soften and transform that meat, I think you're you have like less likelihood of not getting the result that you want. Whereas I think when you're doing rubs and applying things from the outside, sometimes it just doesn't work out.
Really, Shannon? Let me tell you. Really? I'm not gonna say I'm intimidated by brine because I feel like I go in the kitchen, I cook a lot. I've never brined a turkey. I always do a buttered herb rub on the outside. I make up this compound, butter compound, and I rub the turkey. I feel like I always get a juicy turkey.
I mean, my thing is that I feel like with the brine, you just cannot go wrong. And you have a lot of options in terms of how you want to inflect the brine. Like, you can use different types of salt.
Yeah.
You can do herbs. You can even use buttermilk if you're feeling adventurous. And I feel like if you do that, like, again, you really cannot go wrong because we're talking about a chemical process that changes the meat and makes it really, really soft.
Yeah. Did you grow up seeing people brine?
I did not. It's something I came to rather recently. Started doing that exclusively 2 years ago, and I'm always pleased with the results.
Yeah, I didn't. I actually need to call my mom or call someone in my family. I don't know what the hell they put on the turkey because all I know it was good and it wasn't dry, but it wasn't probably fancy.
Well, you know, I think what you probably experienced was just grandma taking her time with it.
Yeah.
And when you take your time with something like that, again, you can't go wrong.
Yeah, I swear, all they must have put on it was probably a little oil or a little butter and some poultry seasoning and salt and pepper.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, what they also had working in their favor was the fact that the ingredients were probably pretty good.
Yeah.
Based on where you grew up and the time we're talking about.
Yeah, well, you think the 80s?
The 80s, Athens, Georgia, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I'll have to find out. Yeah. Well, and I'm thinking about to my mother. You know, I'm a third generation Athenian, as I like to say. So I'm sure that she learned this basic plain way, you know, time and time again. Okay, so we're going to move on from the turkey. We talked about the stuffing, dressing, brine or herb butter rub. Next one, pumpkin or sweet potato.
I saw this question and I was like, this is like a no-brainer for me because I'm from Georgia by way of Charleston. I don't know anything about pumpkins. I'm just going to stop right there. I mean, that's not true. I you know, I like to be open-minded. I like to use everything. But for me, it's all about the sweet potato.
Really? Okay. Really, so have you had a good pumpkin pie or pumpkin anything here?
Many times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just seems so time consuming with the pumpkin. I wouldn't use the canned pumpkin. So if I made a pumpkin pie, I would buy a pumpkin. Would you do the same thing and roast it?
Yeah, I would. I would not recommend using anything from a can. It's like if you really don't want to take the time to work with the pumpkin, do the sweet potatoes. They don't take that long to roast. It's like 30 or 40 minutes depending on the size of potatoes you pick out. It's really foolproof.
And you can also like boil them. I'm going to be honest with you. I mean, if I'm in a crunch and that stove is not on, I just boil the sweet potatoes.
Sure.
Make the mash and then, you know, do all the good stuff to make it great.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that you can turn to when you're in a pinch and you don't know how you're going to get that other stuff done for sure.
Right. Okay. Other must-have sides. Shannon, what would you say are the must-have that people have that that are eating now, and you're like, I didn't grow up eating those sides.
Well, you know, I didn't grow up eating Brussels sprouts.
They don't grow in the South. Really?
You know, we had a lot of like shredded cabbage and fried cabbage and stuff like that. So I wasn't like averse to the flavor, but yeah, it took me a little while to catch on, but now I'm a big fan. They're really easy to do.
Yeah.
If you caramelize them, if you throw some bacon fat on it, if you throw some duck fat on it, it's a big crowd pleaser.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What else? What about Matt? I remember last year, Jack, we had someone in the studio, and Jack, the my wonderful producer and engineer, he grew up with mashed potatoes. I did not have mashed potatoes.
You didn't?
No. Wow. I told you that last year, Jack. Yeah. No mashed potatoes. Crazy. Yeah. Shannon, what about you?
We did not do mashed potatoes. We did candied yams, or we would do like creamed sweet potatoes, and that was cool too. I like to do mashed potatoes now because, again, it's really easy. Everybody likes it, and it's kind of hard to go wrong with that one. If I'm in a mood to kind of make it a little more exciting, then I'll just do a warm potato salad.
Oh, yeah. You gave me the best damn recipe. What's that? The warm fennel? What's it?
It has fennel. It has bacon fat in it. Sometimes it has duck.
That is the best potato salad I've had in a long time. I need to post that. We need to post that so people can see it. That is...
That can be done.
It is posted, I think.
Actually, maybe like last month.
Yeah, it's on there. Okay, folks. Yeah. We're going to take a quick break. We're talking all things Thanksgiving with Shannon Musterford. Keep listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Check out our program schedule and show archives on heritageradionetwork.com. We are chatting with Shannon Musterford, Southern-born, Brooklyn-based foodist. I'm calling you a foodist, Shannon.
I don't think that's inaccurate.
That's a good word.
Yeah, you can throw that on me. I mean, I got other words that I go by as well, but... Foodist kind of sums it up.
Yeah, I was like, you're so many things. We got to start off first. You had this brilliant, you were quoted in this brilliant article. What media piece was that article in?
It was in a Daily Beast. It was a piece written by Claire Shavitz about people like myself who are interested in retro cuisines. I want to say the name of the article was Cooking Like It's 1789. I might have gotten the year wrong, but it's somewhere around there. I was talking about how I felt really inspired by the way people talked about cooking in really old cookbooks, where it wasn't about like how to make the perfect dinner as much as it was about how to make a happy home. And they were really explicit and kind of like enthusiastic about this connection between being able to provide for your table and being able to kind of create those connections among people in the family that would make, you know, life more livable and...
So you would say, and you and I have talked about this many times, in terms of the next trend in food. So this retro cuisine, for lack of better words, is that the next big trend, or do you think it's already here?
Well, I don't know if it's so much about retro trends as much as it's about cooking at home. And I think that retro trends have a lot to teach us about how to make it simple and how to use what you have in front of you and how to remember that, again, it's not about being a great cook, per se, as much as it's about just being involved in something daily in your home that's really important and valuable.
The homemaker. We're redefining the word homemaker.
I realized last week that I do want to be a housewife, so I will let y'all know I am single and available. I'm just throwing it out there.
Not like the Bravo franchise, though, huh?
No, not like that. I actually cook.
Ding, 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 ding. So, Shannon, you mentioned earlier Charleston by way of Georgia. Tell me about, you know, I feel like there's a love affair right now with Charleston. People are in love with Sean Brock of Husk and McGrady's. I actually had a chance to meet him at Southern Foodway Alliance.
But that must have been really great. I was like at Brooklyn Taco yesterday, like eating a taco and looking at a Newsweek article about him.
Yeah, he was everywhere. in New York Magazine. I should have brought that for you. It's like 20 damn pages talking about him.
Yeah, I love that article because it points out that what he's into is what I think retro cuisine, again, can teach us about eating today. You just pick stuff that's local. You keep it simple. You reference your family traditions. Like, that's what real good cooking is about.
You know, we've talked a lot. Your grandmother, right, lived in Charleston. And you told me the funniest damn story about your grandmother packing you and your sister up that fried chicken on the Greyhound bus. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I mean, there was a part of me that totally was not feeling cool about that at the time. But when I look back, I love the fact that for her, like, showing us that she cared meant that she made us food. And she did it all the time, every day. Like, I was thinking about this maybe a couple nights ago. I was writing about her. And as far as I can remember, she cooked breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day that I was ever at her house. And I spent a lot of time there.
So, Shannon, some people who are listening, they probably know you, because I would say you are the brains behind Food Culture's famous donut crawl that everyone always talks about. I had to give you a hand clap for making that thing famous, girl. We were famous in Brooklyn. Everyone's like, when is the next one? Are you going to do a next donut crawl? I think pie
would be really awesome. In fact, you know, we can put together one of those, and I would encourage all the listeners to look at entering the Daisy Flower Pie Contest that goes on at Brooklyn Kitchen, I think twice a year. They just had a savory pie contest, and they'll have a sweet one in the summer. It's a great way to get in touch with a lot of what's going on in pies right now.
Yeah, you were in the contest. I think Emily Hanhan, who's been on the show before, a friend of the show. I'm sure there's a whole bunch of other folks who were in the thing, the contest. But yeah, pie is huge now.
Yeah, I mean, there's no easier way to show your love for somebody, put together a really easy kind of one-pot meal. Like, it can be something you eat one night, have for lunch the next day. Is a great gift.
Yeah.
Love pie.
Totally. So, Shannon, yeah, as I said, you're the brains behind the donut crawl, and hopefully you'll help me with the pie. And you're a contributor to foodcultures.com. Thank you so much for helping us out. But tell folks about this really cool series. You've been posting great Southern soul revival. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, totally. I've had a lot of fun with this series. It's inspired by a party I threw for a really good friend a couple months ago, and by my own experience eating like this food that my grandparents would serve at large gatherings and parties and things on the weekend. The Southern Soul Revival is just about gathering your friends, making some really simple kind of big platter dishes, not stressing out too much about the cooking, but making it about that social gathering and getting folks together in one room.
I think you had a lot of comments and a lot of hits on the Sarah Jean's Low Country is rice and...
The Low Country Red Rice.
Yeah. People, what's up with that? Why people are so into it? It's a very simple dish, but...
I mean, it's not like too different from spaghetti and meatballs, you know?
No,
I mean,
it's way different from that, though.
I mean, I'll put it to you this way. It takes a little bit more time to make than spaghetti and meatballs, but at the end of the day, we're talking about a starch, a meat, some tomato sauce, a little salt and pepper. Very, very simple.
Yeah.
Very savory. Goes down easy. Like, you can be a kid, you can be old, like... It kind of hits all the spots that we like to hit when we're talking about a simple meal.
So, folks, if you're at your computer right now, if you go to foodcultures.com, you can see Shannon's series there. She has about 4 posts with the recipes. And hopefully before the end of the year, she'll do a few other things. Shannon, I have to ask this question. You are a woman of many talents. Not only are you this fabulous home cook, but I would consider you an artist.
A fashionista, an artist.
So yeah, you went to like the best art school in the country. How did you transition from art to food?
You know, it's funny when I think about it. It's not really a transition. It's more like different expressions of the same creative current that I've been kind of dealing with since I was a young person. For instance, I started kind of drawing, giving myself projects when I was six. I remember helping my grandma, my parents out in the kitchen when I was like 8 or 9. I was always interested in food and doing things with my hands, creating things, sharing with other people. But practically speaking, what happened was I started giving dinner parties when I was a sophomore at RISD.
Yeah.
And they were kind of like my favorite thing to do on breaks. I would host a lot of holiday gatherings. Like, that's when that got started. And for a few years after graduation, I was an exhibiting artist. Moving to New York, I started working in the photo industry as a styling assistant. And, kind of burnt out a little bit after 4 years. Last summer, a little bit before I wrote you, I decided that I would just spend the summer doing whatever I felt like, and that turned out to be cooking. So at that point, I started reaching out to folks. I interned with BK Farmyards.
Shout out to Stacy Murphy.
Stacy, what's going on? I just started looking at my options for working in the food industry, and I've recently come to the conclusion that for now, it's about food writing. So
cool.
Yeah, you know, after working as a kind of freelance caterer and doing the farming thing, I realized that the best way for me to engage people around food and things I feel are important are to share the stories.
I had to ask you one more thing. It's so much I can, you know, you and I can talk like for hours and hours. Did you see the recent article about our favorite person? This is how we really connected over Mr. Hemmons, James Hemmons, the cook, the chef of Mr. George, I mean Jefferson. What's his name?
Thomas Jefferson. Hemmons works for Thomas Jefferson, yeah.
I was about to say George Washington. Monticello. James Hemmons was there cooking a lot. I forget what the article was. It was like reposted on Twitter a lot and on Facebook in the last week or so.
You know, I didn't see it, but I'm going to take a look for it because I really felt inspired by his story when I was considering making my career change last year, actually.
And for folks who are listening, James Hemmons he eventually became a free black man, but he was a slave. He was a French-trained chef. He went to France, learned how to cook, and he was a chef for Thomas Jefferson for a long, long time.
Yeah, I mean, he had a really great opportunity in his hands in that he was working in a household where he had a really great garden and farm right outside the door. And Mr. Jefferson was interested in creating a scene around his table that would introduce diplomats from around the world to what he considered to be an American approach to high-end cooking.
Yeah. And the place, it's funny, before I was like deep in food, I actually went to Monticello. This is when they were rebuilding some of the slave quarters, but they had the garden and stuff there. I'm sure it's like even bigger now. They're like probably doing a huge emphasis on the garden. Okay, Shannon, we got to take a break. We have one last segment. We could talk.
We could go on and on and on.
On and on. Listeners, keep listening. It's all about Turkey Day on Hot Grease. Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network. I am your host, Nicole Taylor. Hot Grease is produced and engineered by Jack Inslee. This program is being sponsored by Whole Foods Market. Let me give a Southern Girl's hug to Roberta's Restaurant, located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York. The location of two sustainable shipping containers known as Heritage Radio Network. We're talking all about the last Thursday in November on today's Hot Grease. If you're just tuning in, the super talented Shannon Musterford is in the studio. Shannon can be found on Twitter. Your Twitter handle is Shannon Musty.
Yeah, it's a kind of an unfortunate nickname from college that stuck. RA coordinator I used to work for named Nathan Andere, I hope you're listening, gave me that nickname. And
it's kind of catchy. Folks can't forget that. Shannon Musting.
Indeed.
So, Shannon, we're going to talk about non-food factors on Turkey Day. But I have to throw in cocktails because I know that you are the cocktail extraordinaire.
There's no meal without a good drink.
So I'm going to start with cocktails.
Sure.
What do you recommend for folks? Is eggnog a damn Thanksgiving thing? Because someone was like, oh, my friend was like, oh, are you going to make eggnog? Is that a Thanksgiving cocktail?
I've never encountered eggnog at Thanksgiving. But again, never say never because everybody does it a little differently.
I thought that was like cocktail parties before Christmas or like December. I don't know.
I mean, I always thought of eggnog as something when it's just like
cold outside. I
feel like doing something bad. Let me have some egg, milk, and rum at the same time.
So what do you think? What do you suggest if you had two cocktails to serve to folks on?
I say keep it simple. Do a punch or do like a simple stir and build cocktail. No shaking, no more than three ingredients. Something that you don't have to fuss over and something that's pretty easy for everybody to relate to. So I'm thinking good thing to do is a bourbon cocktail or to do a rum cocktail. I had this really awesome Doc and Stormy last night. Had a party and folks from Brooklyn Soda Works came over.
Oh, okay, cool.
They brought their ginger beer and some rum. That's a really nice combination. Basically, you do like 3/4 of the soda.
Yeah.
Throw the rum on the top. Add a little ice.
That's simple. You don't have to really be standing making drinks all night.
No, no. You don't want to do that. You want to be out there mingling. So I say Dark and Stormy or I'm a big old fan of the old fashioned.
Yeah. Or either a cider drink. I feel like you could do some, make a hot cider drink. Is that kind of Thanksgiving-ish?
Yeah, totally. Like cider spiced with some rum.
Yeah. Okay, so we got the cocktails out. Other factors. You have mad style, and you know, sometimes our conversation moves to clothes. What the hell should someone wear? I know this is kind of vain, people, but we have to really talk about this.
I mean, why would you go through all the trouble to make a really good meal and then show up looking shabby?
Oh, okay, so we on the same page.
I mean, call me biased. I'm okay. From the South. You got to get proper. You got to get dressed.
Okay, so... Okay, folks, if you're listening, you really need to fix it up. Put on a shirt, okay, if you're a guy. Jack.
Button it up.
If you're going somewhere for Thanksgiving.
Guilty.
Oh, you're guilty?
Yes.
Jack, you need to put a button down on for
guilty.
Thanksgiving.
Please.
So what about, so we all know, so guys need to wear a button down shirt. They can wear the dirty Converse. You'll let them wear that?
That's cutting a little close.
Okay. So what about chicks? What?
I mean, keep it simple. Do what makes you feel pretty. I mean, think about it. It's about celebrating life. It's about celebrating food. You're supposed to be with people you enjoy. Look cute. Put on a cute top. Throw a blazer on. Take the blazer off. Put on a dress. Everybody's different.
Okay. Okay, so we got that clear. Y'all heard that, right? Music. I go to a lot of parties, get-togethers at folks' house, and they don't have any music.
Sad.
I'm like, yo, what the hell? I'm like, is this a cultural thing? People are just sitting around. It's like no music. What is your take on that? Music or not at Thanksgiving?
Music is a must. I repeat, music is a must.
So should it be at dinner, low in the background, or this is like after dinner? What do you suggest?
From the moment people walk through the door till the moment you wish them to leave. There must be music.
Okay, I feel the same way. Please, people, if you're listening, all these gatherings get together at folks' house, and I feel like I gotta keep talking to make the music go on. It's a fail.
It's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, because I'm sure no one wants to hear my voice. And the final.
Wait, what kind of music, though?
Well, there's no right answer again. Like, everybody's okay. Different. Like, at my Thanksgiving, I do a lot of Motown, a lot of classic soul. I do music that's like kind of fun to groove to, and then like later if you want to push everything aside and dance, that's cool.
Oh man, you dancing?
We get down.
Yeah, I try not to do all that. I'm on the fourth floor. I get a little loud. People stomping and drinking and they start dancing. That's just too much.
I think I've been a little spoiled by living in a garden apartment for a few years.
Okay. So really, the music is up to the person. Last but not least, photos. I mean, you're an artist.
It's sad when you don't have a photo of a good event. Whenever I throw dinner, I don't have photos afterwards. I feel like I did something like not right. So yeah, like find a friend who really loves to take photos. You got an aspiring photographer friend, somebody who wants to be famous for food photography. Let them know that you really want them to take pictures. Like, put it up on Flickr. It's a cute way to connect with family. You can send them the pictures. If you can't be with your family, they can at least share your joy. Take the photos.
And what do you say for the person that's always taking photos and they're never in the photo?
That's not cute either.
I feel bad. This is for Adrian. Bless his heart. You know, AD, my permanent roommate.
Indeed.
He's never in pictures. He takes all the pictures. Bless his heart. As they say in the South, how do we fix that? The person that's always.
This is a tough one because sometimes when you're in the thick of the excitement around eating and drinking, it's kind of hard to talk rationally about stuff like this. I say it's good to have two people. I say it's good to have.
Okay. So you need two people. So folks, if you're planning your Thanksgiving dinner, designate two people or maybe just have the camera on the table and people can just snap as they.
Yeah. I feel like if you, incentivize it a little bit. You know, people love to be on Facebook. They love to look cute.
Oh yeah, they love Facebook. Mm-hmm. Shannon, oh man, we could go on and on. Thank you for coming by Hot Grease a few days before Thanksgiving. This has been a treat.
Yeah, this is perfect timing. I'm really glad I could join you now and talk a little bit about the holiday. Yeah. I'm very excited.
I have one Thanksgiving tip that I want to share.
Oh yeah, good to do it.
And I learned this the hard way. Don't talk politics at the dinner table.
Oh. Really? Oh, that always comes
you
up.
You never know. You never know what might come out.
You don't think so? Oh, with the alcohol and stuff, people get a little...
You know, in-laws you haven't met, people... Mm. You never know. You never know what may offend somebody.
Well, people always probably get offended after they leave my house. Oh, well. Because I'm always saying some crazy stuff after a bunch of alcohol. Okay, folks. Happy Turkey Day 2011. Shannon, thank you for coming on again. If you want to find Shannon on social media, she's at Shannon Musty on Twitter. Join me here every Monday, y'all, at 3:30. Until then, always take the road less traveled.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.